And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome to the first episode of the Broken Sea Swag Cast. I'm Bill Holwig, and I just wanted to share some of these gems I seem to find of OTR around the net with all of you for free as swag. Anyway, I've gone in and cleaned them up as much as possible without ruining the files and EQ'd them a bit just so they sound fairly even. But these are things that have gotten me into audio drama, and I think you will like them. Our setup's going to be, we're going to have one show to open the show, usually a 30 to 45 minute one-off, and then followed by two serials that are about 15 minutes apiece. And if you want to find out what they are, stay tuned. This has been Bill Holwig. Thank you again for listening. Yes, I love sharing things, so here's a podcast devoted to old-time radio. And tonight we're going to have Secret of the Incas starring Charlton Heston, episode one of the fantasy game of the Avengers radio drama serial, and episode one of Temple of Vampires. And now a little bit of information on Secret of the Incas starring Charlton Heston. And tonight's first show is from the Lux Radio Theater, one of the genuine old-time radio anthology series from NBC Network. From 34 to 35, on CBS from 35 to 54, and back on NBC from 54 to 55, adapted first is from Stageworks and then especially films to hour-long live radio presentations, it quickly became the most popular dramatic anthology series on radio, running more than 20 years. Many of the greatest or at least most legendary names in stage and film appeared on the series, most in roles they made famous on the screen. Abbott Costello, Gene Arthur, Lauren Bacall, Lucille Ball, Ethel Barrymore, John Barrymore, Lionel Barrymore, Ingrid Bergman, Humphrey Bogart, James Cagney, Claudette Colbert, and a host of others, including tonight's star, Charlton Heston. Yes, my hero from Planet of the Apes. And tonight's show is Secret of the Incas, starring Chuck Heston, who plays Harry Steele on the trail of an ancient artifact. Legend states that the Inca Empire was destroyed by the gods when a golden jeweled starburst was stolen from the Temple of the Sun centuries ago, and that the ancient civilization will be reborn once the treasure is returned. Harry Steele, an adventurer, is seeking an artifact as his nemesis, Ed Morgan, played by Thomas Mitchell, along with Elena Antonescu, by Nicole Murray, who is an Iron Curtain refugee. Secret of the Incas was filmed on location in Peru, and it was the first time a major Hollywood studio filmed Cusco and Machu Picchu. 500 native Indians were used as extras in the film. The film is often cited by film buffs as a direct inspiration for the Indiana Jones franchise, with many of the scenes in Secret of the Incas bearing a striking resemblance in tone and structure to scenes in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Throughout Secret of the Incas, the main character, Harry Steele, played by Chuck Heston, can be seen wearing the Indiana Jones outfit, brown leather jacket, fedora, tan pants, and over-the-shoulder bag and revolver. The character also sometimes wears a light beard, unusual for films of this time, and there's a tomb scene involving a revelatory shaft of light similar to the map room sequence in Raiders. On December 14, 1954, Charlton Heston and Nicole Murray reprised their roles in the Lux Theater version of Secret of the Incas, which you are now about to hear. Enjoy.
Makers of Lux Toilet Soap brings you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Charlton Heston and Nicole Murray in Secret of the Incas. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Irving Cummings.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Throughout the ages, men have been willing to sacrifice a great deal in the search for lost treasures, even their very lives. In tonight's play, Secret of the Incas, we will take you to the lofty Andes of Peru and the frantic race to find a fabulous sunburst of the ancient tribe of Incas. and we have the original stars of this exciting adventure drama from Paramount Pictures, Charlton Heston and Nicole Morey. In the high Andes of Peru, the descendants of the Inca have searched for centuries for the symbol of their past glories, a fabulous golden disc encrusted with jewels. Once found, say the legends, the Inca nation will rise again to even greater glories. There are others who search for this golden disc, but for different reasons. One of them is an American. His name is Harry Steele.
Strictly legitimate, the business that first brought me down here. Peru's a mountain country. Needed air transportation, and I had a plane. Nice, neat, 24-passenger job. That was the beginning of the Harry Steele Charter Airline. It ended with a sudden merger between the nice, neat, 24-passenger job and an extra tall hunk of the Andes. No plane, no income. But there are ways of making luck, even in Cusco. If you've ever been to Peru, you've heard about Cusco. Maybe you've even landed at the airport there. You might even have seen me hanging around the waiting room talking to Bert Springer. Bert's the American agent for the airline and field manager.
Hey, Harry.
Yeah?
Ed Morgan was looking for you.
Morgan, that makes my day complete. Let's see your flight list.
Well, the plane just coming in?
Yeah. Give me the names of any of them that sound like tourists. Rich tourists.
Mr. and Mrs. Winston from Boston. Mr. and Mrs. Richmond from St. Louis.
Is that it? That's it. Okay, Winston and Richmond. Oh, one other thing. Any private planes do in?
You know private planes don't come in here, Harry.
No harm in asking, is it?
The answer is always no.
Yes, someday the answer might be yes.
Suppose a private plane does come in, then what?
Just between you and me, Bert, I'll steal it.
You
arriving passengers will please bring their baggage in the lobby.
You know, Harry, for a moment, I almost believed you had,
so did I. Where'd Morgan say it'd be?
At El Prado. You ought to stay away from that crook.
Why? He makes me feel honest. Well, here come my pigeons. I'll see you, Bert.
Okay.
Mr. and Mrs. Winston. Mr. and Mrs. Richmond.
Oh, Edgar, somebody's paging us.
I am, madam. Welcome to Cusco, City of Light. I'm Harry Steele. The airlines asked me to guide you around the city. 100 soles a day. Each. So maybe the airline hadn't asked me to take over. Nobody ever bothered to check up. I herded the Winstons and the Richmonds into a taxi and delivered them to the hotel. After that, I dropped by Ed Morgan's hangout, El Prado. Spotted a huge hulk of a man bending over the billiard table in the pool. Morgan.
Ah, I've been looking for you, Harry.
Yes, so I heard.
I got a deal for you.
How much?
Why don't you ask what it's about first?
Details come later. How much?
I don't know. It's a girl. Hungarian or Romanian, I'd say, from her name. She needs help.
What kind?
She'll tell you. She gets them tonight from the Paz, coming by truck.
People don't ride in trucks unless they're trying to get past the border inspection.
That's right.
Well, I'll be seeing you.
Oh, Harry, one more thing.
Mm-hmm. I thought there might be something else.
I hear the Archaeological Museum just put up a new exhibit, a big stone carving. Inca.
That's what you heard, huh?
Heard an Indian found the carving with a corner missing from it.
Anything else?
Heard the Indian sold the missing piece to an American. I heard it might be the key to the hidden Inca treasure.
You get good ears, Morgan.
But I just thought I'd mention it in case you had something to tell me.
No, can't think of a thing. Except, be seeing. As I walked out, I could feel Morgan's eyes boring into my shoulder blades. Then, just as I reached the patio door, I jerked the knife out of the door and swung around. There's nobody inside.
So I turned and headed back for the pool room. Morgan saw me coming, the knife in my hand.
Harry, no rough stuff now.
Harry, funny thing just happened to me. You see this knife?
Throw it on the floor, Harry.
Who does it belong to?
Not me.
Who does it belong to?
A friend of mine.
That's what I thought. You tell your friend he needs a little practice. His aim is bad.
Well, that's why I use aim, Harry. You don't figure I really meant anything serious. It's a friendly hint.
Yeah. Next time you try hinting to me, Morgan, you better hire a guy that throws a straight blade, because if he doesn't, I'm coming after you.
Now, you're quite a guy, aren't you, Buster? Big, good-looking, figure you got everything. You know, I was like you once. I came down here to teach him the score. A quick million, and then home. 14 years I've been waiting for a line on that Inca treasure.
Uh-huh. You waited till you're old and fat and tired, didn't you? Even if you make that million now, you're too used up to spend it.
Harry, you got that stone, the missing piece that says where the treasure is buried. You got it, you know where it is, and you need a partner.
Not you, Morgan.
Listen to me, Harry.
I told you, I'm not interested, Morgan. By the time I got back to the hotel, my party of tourists was unpacked, washed up, and panting to see the sights of Cusco. I gave them a quick whirl through the shops around the plaza, hiked through the university. For the evening show, I brought them back to the main dining room of the Hotel de Turistas. Me, I headed for the bar.
Oh, Mr. Steele. Mr. Steele.
Yeah? Something, Mrs. Winston?
My husband isn't feeling well. I just sent him up to the room. Do you think a doctor
might... No, he doesn't need one. Just tell him to take it easy. Stop prancing around the dance floor at this altitude.
Yes. Cusco is over 2 miles high, isn't it?
It is.
Mr. Steele.
Just call me Harry.
Good. The altitude doesn't affect you, does it?
I'm used to it.
Good again. The orchestra's playing a rumba, Harry.
Mm-hmm. I take my excitement in tall glasses.
You know, you're quite an enigma. All afternoon, I've wondered why a man seemingly as capable as you...
buries himself in this half-forgotten corner of the world. A lot of people have asked me that, Miss Winston.
Women?
Yeah. You see, I came down here with an airplane.
And it smashed against a mountain.
You've been asking around, huh? Well, what was left of the plane paid my way out of the hospital, but I owe the Peruvian Mining and Transport Company 8,000 soles for gasoline and hangar space. Till I can pay it, they take a dim view of me getting an exit visa.
An exit visa?
Yeah. Maybe you'd like to lend me the money?
Maybe you'd like to show me some nightlife?
With Mr. and Mrs. Richmond.
That's up to you.
There's not much to see. What there is, you'll find at a place called El Prado. Ask for Ed Morgan. He'll take care of you.
Thanks for all your trouble, Mr. Steele. We'll see you in the morning.
Okay. Manuel.
Si, senor.
Another double.
Veridi called you, Mr. Steele. Would you be Mr. Harry Steele?
That's right. I don't remember seeing you around.
You haven't. I arrived tonight from La Paz by train.
Oh, yeah. Ed Morgan sent you.
Yes. Please, there is somewhere we can talk alone.
Yeah? Come on. Manuel, skip the drink. Hey, you've got seats somewhere in this patio.
It is no matter. Mr. Steele, I am Elena Antonescu.
Romanian?
Yes, a refugee.
How'd you get out, under the fence?
In a way. From Europe, I go to La Paz, and in La Paz, I hear that Mr. A. Morgan in Cusco can help me. Now, Mr. Morgan said it might be Mr. Steele.
Call me Harry.
Thank you.
Just, what's this help to be?
I want to get into the United States.
Why don't you ask me something easy, like a nice little murder, a boatload of penis?
All I wish from you is to go north. If I can get even to Mexico, I will be that much closer to the United States.
No passport, no papers.
None.
Besides wanting to come to Cusco, any particular reason why you left La Paz?
The police. No visible means of support.
They need glasses.
Please, without your help, I'm in serious trouble.
How much money have you got?
Well, about $50.
You're still in trouble.
But it's all the money I have.
That's not money. That's tips. I'm sorry, but the wheels just don't turn for $50.
I see.
Oh, look. I've seen too many women cry before. It won't work. Maybe if you try somebody else.
There is nobody else. It's no use. He'll come after me.
Who will?
The Romanian consul. He flew to La Paz to get me.
Oh, that's a different story. Huh? It wasn't because of the police and the
You
spot.
Never live behind the iron curtain. You don't know what it's like. And they do anything to get a refugee back. They'll follow me here.
Well, that still gives you a couple of days to figure something out. The next passenger flight isn't due till Friday.
I didn't tell you that the Romanian consul flies his own planes.
No, you didn't. Flies his own. A big plane or a little one?
I don't know. Why?
Kind of a hobby of mine, planes. He's in La Paz.
Yes.
Well, what's his name?
Anton Marco.
Here, maybe you can use this.
What is it?
Key to my hotel room.
Oh, no,
now,
I...
Look, you got to stay undercover. The room's all yours till I work out some details.
Details?
Yeah. I'll tell you about them later. One of the details was a phone call I had to make. Long-distance call across the national boundary to La Paz, Bolivia. It was after midnight when I finally made the connection.
Bueno? Bueno?
Señor Anton Marco, por favor.
Yo soy el señor Marco.
Oh, habla usted inglés, señor Marco.
Yes. Who is this?
My name is Steele. Harry Steele, Mr. Marco. It's a very interesting phone call, you might say. Very rewarding. Next morning, I had him send breakfast up to the girl in room 620. After that, mostly to pass the time, I escorted my tourists, Winston's and Richmond's, through the great cathedral and the museum. The curator opened the vault for him, brought out his rarest exhibits.
This was found in a tomb just outside Cusco. And now, our most cherished and most valuable relic.
Oh, a golden sunburst.
Set with the finest jewels of the Inca Empire.
How do we know they're the finest, Senor Fernandez? How about that sunburst that was stolen from the Temple of the Sun 400 years ago?
Well, we only know that by reputation. Perhaps it's merely a legend.
Pretty specific for a legend. 30 pounds of pure gold, set with 119 diamonds and 243 other jewels.
And no one knows where it is now?
No.
You sure, Harry?
Morgan. When did you develop a taste for museums?
Just now. I want to talk to you, Harry. Listen. Harry, I'm losing my patience. Harry, will you listen?
I am listening to the most beautiful sound in the world. I got to the airport just as the plane taxied up the strip. Single engine job.
Just right.
Welcome to Cusco, City of Light, Mr. Marco.
You are the man who telephoned me?
Harry Steele's the name.
And the young lady we talked about?
I have her ready and waiting.
Splendid. And where?
Before we get to that, Mr. Marco, suppose we talk about pangos, zlotys, whatever you use in Romania.
Oh, your money. I have it here in this envelope. Mr.
Call me Harry. Yeah. Oh, dear. Okay, now we go talk to Bert Springer.
Springer?
The airport manager, I thought you might like to order a full load of gasoline in case, flying out of here in a hurry, maybe?
Oh, you are a man after my own kind, Mr. Steele.
I am, huh? Took Marco to the hotel, checked him in, and told him he could meet his young lady in the bar in 10 minutes. Then I went upstairs and broke the news to Miss Antonescu. It wasn't easy.
I've never seen such a look of terror come into a woman's eyes.
Just for money?
No. For Marco's plane. I want that plane so bad I can taste it. I had to use you as a bait to get Marco to fly it up here.
And you expect him to give you his own plane?
No. I'll get it, but I need your help.
Ah, then you are not ready to turn me over, Marco.
I never said I was going to. When I fly out of here, you go with me.
Mexico?
We'll talk about that when we get the plane.
How?
All we need are the keys. That's your job.
He is waiting for us in the bar?
Right now.
Then the sooner the better, Mrs. Steele.
Swell. Oh, Miss Hendon asked you.
Yes?
Call me Harry. And well, the gentleman wants another drink, pronto.
Si, senor, pronto.
And what about you, Mr. Steele? And our lovely companion.
Okay, three drinks, Manuel.
Muy bien, senor.
That is 7 each.
And if I agree to return with you?
This J for the Chunglish.
Because I prefer to speak English.
That doesn't matter, senor. Steele.
Yeah.
The drinks, senor, you want them as before?
Exactly the same. One glass with double scotch, two glasses plain soda and iced tea.
But your friend, senor, so much whiskey at this altitude, it goes to the head very bad.
No, really?
Good in 7 minutes. Elena, good in 7 minutes.
Perhaps.
Perhaps what?
We are not talking to you, Mr. Steele. Elena, Dr. Novenitz Comine.
Dr. Novenitz Comine?
Oh, yeah, we got that part. What else?
Dr. Novenitz Comine?
Mr. Steele.
Yeah, right now. The keys are in his hip pocket. I'll put you in the patio. Manuel?
Senor?
Maybe you'd better help Senor Marcou to his room.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know how it is. Too much whiskey at this altitude, it goes to the head very bad.
Si, very bad, senor.
Here, by the fountain.
Keys?
In his pocket, I suppose.
Good girl, let's see him.
What about our luggage?
I'll send a boy up for it. Let's have the keys.
At the right hand, Harry.
Huh?
When we are in the plane.
Well, that's the way it's going to be. Just when I thought you were beginning to trust me, Miss Andonescu.
Call me Elena.
Elena and I both needed Marco's plane, but for different reasons. Timing was everything. We reached the airfield at exactly midnight. That's when the lights in the administration building turn off. The only other light was in the hangar. Marco's plane was right outside at the head of the runway. Made a wide circle around the hangar just to be sure of everything.
Harry.
Yeah, soldiers.
They're right inside the hangar.
That must be their jeep alongside Marco's plane.
Then it's impossible.
Maybe not. I think I can get rid of them.
You have a gun?
No. Here's what we do. You start moving toward the plane. Keep to the north side of the hangar so they won't see you. And when the soldiers run out of the hangar, you beat it to the plane. Understand?
I think so.
All right. Unlock the plane, get inside, and unlock the instrument panel. Now, about that time, I'll be along.
You sure?
No. Now start walking toward that plane. I watched him start, then I circled back toward the administration building. Right outside the big glass window of the waiting room, there was a little strip of dark. That's where I found the rock. Now was my chance, while the jeep was racing toward the administration building.
Harry! Lock it down in a hurry, but there are so many creatures.
That's my job. Please fasten your safety belts.
Hurry, please.
Lights of the Jeep faded away below us as I circled for altitude. We had 8 hours worth of gas, more than enough for my plans. Later, I dropped down to look for a certain landmark. I found it and a place to sit down.
Harry, are you sure we're landing in Mexico?
Hardly. We're still in Peru, not too far from Cusco.
But we have been flying for almost 4 hours.
In circles. That clearing coming up at us is all part of my itinerary.
You said you'd take me to Mexico.
I didn't say when. Meanwhile, maybe you've heard of Machu Picchu.
No.
It's an ancient city of the Incas. You'll see it in a few hours.
Why do you want to go to this place?
It's out of the high rent district. Okay, end of the line.
I'm not going with you.
Fine. You wouldn't get far hiking through the jungle in those high French heels, and...
When will you be back?
Oh, 2 or 3 days. You won't be lonely. There's plenty of wildlife to keep you company.
Harry.
Yeah?
I think in my luggage I have walking shoes.
Sat down almost in the bank of the Urubamba River. Marco's plane had a collapsible rubber lifeboat, which we used as a ferry. After that came the jungle.
Harry.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Look, don't waste your energy on chit-chat.
Where, Harry?
California.
Ah, I know all about California. Everything. All the apples come from there.
Apples? Yeah, sure, sure.
You see? I know everything about the United States. I want to go there to live, so I study and read all about it. Ask me anything, Harry, and I can tell you.
Who cut down the cherry tree?
Abraham Lincoln.
I didn't think you'd know.
Harry, please. I can breathe.
That's the altitude. Oh. Sit down for a minute.
It's cold.
The altitude.
The altitude, the altitude.
Might as well get used to it. Machu Picchu's still higher.
You have friends there?
I hope not. Nobody goes there. Just ruins. Huge city of stone built in a mountaintop. The Incas left it. It was lost for 1,000 years.
A city of stone. And... that piece of stone which you carry, is it from that city?
What piece of stone?
In your coat pocket. Twice I have seen you take it out and look at it like a man looks at a woman when they are in love.
Maybe this sort of look.
No, you cannot pretend it.
Maybe this sort of kiss.
Why did you do that?
Maybe to change the subject. Come on your feet. Let's move it. It was late afternoon when we reached the crest of the mountain. We came to a precipice with a sheer drop of thousands of feet. Below us was a mist of fog. Then, slowly, here and there through the fog, we made out solid forms, towers of stone. Huge, gigantic, unbelievable towers of stone. Machu Picchu.
It is. How can anyone describe it? A dream.
Uh-huh. And this one's gonna come true.
Harry.
I hear it.
Perhaps a ship here.
Likely. There's something else. Down there at the foot of the ruins. You see him?
Yes, Dan.
Army type. Means there's somebody else here to do some digging. Looks like some sort of an archaeological expedition. Well, we'd better start thinking up a good story for ourselves. We reached the floor of the valley and started toward the tents. It was a good-sized camp. Beyond, coming down from the ruins, was a long procession of Indians. That's where the music was coming from. We walked almost into the center of the camp before we spotted one of the archaeologists. He was a tall, good-looking guy. Stared at us as if we were some sort of mirage.
Hello there.
Dr. Livingston, I presume?
No, Morehead is my name. We don't have a Livingston with our expedition.
Oh, I see a joke. My name's Steele, Harry Steele. This is Miss Elena Antonescu.
A pleasure, Miss Antonescu. May I ask how in the world you two happened to be...
Our plane was forced down. Mr. Steele is my pilot.
Yeah, we ran out of gas. Made a landing about 10 miles back. Some natives told us you were up here.
We hoped you might have gasoline.
I'm sorry, we have no use for it, I'm afraid.
There is gasoline at Tampu, Dr. Moore.
Tampu, of course. Miss Antonescu, Mr. Steele, may I present Colonel Cardoza?
How do you do?
I am honored. Well, I'm in charge of this expedition. It's Colonel Cardoza who's the final authority. The colonel represents the Peruvian government and sees to it that we don't appropriate any valuable souvenirs.
Found anything that fits that description?
This afternoon, Mr. Steele, in one of the tombs, we found the mummy of the Mamacuna.
The Mamacuna?
The high priestess of Machu Picchu. It is her mummy which the Indians are now bringing down into the camp. It requires great ceremony.
Mr. Steele, about your gasoline problem.
Oh, yeah, the gasoline.
Our short wave to Tampu, that's our supply base, and ask them to send up some by fuel by pack train.
Oh, you have a short wave, sir?
Naturally. We're very much in touch with civilization up here.
Really? That's comforting to know, isn't it? From the way both Colonel Cardoza and Dr. Moorhead had eyed Miss Elena Antonescu, I wasn't too worried about them being in a sweat to get the gasoline up to us, but that shortwave radio. We ate dinner around the campfire, and afterwards Dr. Moorhead trotted out some of the trinkets they'd found in the ruins. Pottery, necklaces, knives. The whole show was for Elena's benefit.
Beginning to disappear when these objects were made. We believe that the finest specimens are still to be found somewhere in the ruins above us.
In Manco's tomb, maybe?
You know quite a bit about Inca history, Mr. Steele.
Well, Manco was a great prince, wasn't he?
Yes. We think we have located his tomb. We hope to enter it within a day or two.
You think you'll find the sunburst?
You have heard about that too, eh?
Hasn't everybody?
I haven't. What is this sunburst?
A legend, Miss Antonescu. Supposedly, a great golden plate studded with diamonds and other jewels. The story goes that it was the symbol of Inca power, that it was stolen from the Temple of the Sun and hidden in Manco's tomb. That if this golden sunburst can be found, the Inca nation will rise again to even greater power. Well, this is what the Indians believe.
Even though they're here in your camp?
And they, above all, they say there is a map carved in stone, a key that will lead its owner to the great sunburst.
A map carved in stone. How big would this stone be? Oh,
see what you've started, Mr. Steele. In another moment, we'll be discussing the positive reality of ghosts.
It's not a bad idea, why don't we? Later, I got the jump in the competition. I took Elena to the special tent that Moorhead had put up for her.
Harry, I know why you wanted to come here.
I figured you did.
Suppose I tell Moorhead or Cardoza.
You won't. Not unless you want to get sent back to Romania for your trouble. You're the only way out of Peru, is me.
You forget something, Harry. The radio.
What about it?
All they must do is contact any station. They will hear about us. That we stole the Marcos pen.
I don't know. Yeah, Cardoza tried to use the shortwave just a little while ago. Seems it was out of order.
Mm-hmm. You take care of everything, don't you, Harry?
Everything. You just relax and have sweet dreams.
Yes. Good night.
Good night.
Harry.
Yeah?
Today, while we were climbing the mountain, we stopped and you kissed me.
I did.
You remember it, Harry. Why did you do it?
I haven't the faintest idea. Good night.
Next day, Moorhead and Cardoza invited us to go with them into the tunnel the diggers were driving under one of the temples. Moorhead called one of the Indians over to us.
Archie Kutak.
Peter.
I want you to meet some new friends. Miss Antonescu and Mr. Steele. Archie Kutak is pure Inca, descendant of the old princes. In charge of our digging.
The Indian gave me a cold stare and then spat in the ground.
Excuse you. Bruno.
Chukutek.
Tell him I understand Quechua very well.
Oh? But I must apologize.
Why? What did he say?
He said I have a gray face. The Indians say that for someone not to be trusted. Liar, cheat, even a thief. What do you think, Dr. Moorhead?
Please, this is most embarrassing. But then everyone's nerves are so keyed up. You see, according to our calculations, Blanco's tomb is directly ahead of us. We may break through at any moment.
They didn't break through, not that day or the next. The air in the tunnel was so heavy with dust, Elena and I spent most of our time outside. The third afternoon, I wandered back to my tent to stretch out for a while. As I lifted the tent flap, I saw a pair of boots on my bed.
Come in. Don't be bashful.
Morgan, how did you find me?
Logic, my boy. You stole Marco's plane, but it never turned up at any of the airfields within range of your gas supply. So I figured you hadn't tried to go very far. Maybe just far enough to be near the Inca treasure.
Hasn't been found yet.
But soon?
I think they're in the track of Manco's tomb.
And the sunburst, it'll be there.
That's what it says in the stone.
And you still got the stone.
What do you think?
Hand it over, Harry.
No.
Harry, maybe I should remind you that we're in business together, and it's big business. We just had a meeting, and we selected a new chairman of the board. These 6 votes are for me.
And the little man with the big gun wins.
The stone, Harry.
It's in my pocket.
All right, take it out. Throw it over here on the bed. Ah, that's nice, Harry. That's real nice.
Well, your feelings are good. What about me? What's our deal?
50-50. We get the sunburst and we get out of here together. When we get back to civilization, we split everything. You trust me, don't you, Harry?
Oh, sure. Completely. What about the girl?
I like girls. This one, she could wind up with all I've got if she works at it.
You crumb.
Mr. Steele.
Petra Kutek, duck that gun. Okay, okay.
Mr. Steele, is Pakachutek, sir.
Yeah, what is it?
Dr. Moorhead and Colonel Cardoza ask you to come to tunnel. Monko's tomb has been found.
All right, I'll be there.
Thank you.
Well, don't look so unhappy, Harry. That's good news. It's the best. And I'm right here to share it with you.
Ah, shut up. I figured I'd have to talk fast, alibi the arrival of Morgan at Machu Picchu, so I told Moorhead and Cardoza that just before the plane crash, I'd managed to send out a radio call. Morgan had picked it up and had come searching for us. But in their excitement, they hardly listened to my explanation.
Gentlemen, this is the most important day of my life. Think of it. The tomb of Manco found.
A great event, yes. I suggest we all have a drink on this.
Right now? But the tomb is...
We breached the wall, but we won't explore the interior until tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yes. Archie Kutek has requested a delay in order that his people may perform the required ceremonies.
Now we must have ceremonies?
Of course. This is an event of great religious importance to the Incas. That's no reason for us to put off our own celebration.
No, no. And Mr. Steele, Mr. Morgan, if you would care to join us.
Yes, count us in.
Yeah. By the way, Dr. Moorhead, I've been thinking of doing a little hunting up here. You mind lending me a rifle?
Oh, I'm afraid there's no game up at this altitude. We're too high.
I might be lucky. I'll find something to shoot at.
No, we do not have any firearms, Mr. Steele. There is no use for them.
Ah, that's a real disappointment, isn't it, Harry? Not a single gun in camp. Well, well.
Morgan never let me out of his sight. Dinner, I managed only a few words to Elena. The whole valley glowed that night with the flare of 100 torches. The Indians were streaming in from all sides. From somewhere up the ruined towers of Machu Picchu, we could hear their music. Elena and Morehead went up to watch the ceremony.
You are a very quiet man, Doctor. You make me feel comfortable.
And yet there's so much I'd like to tell you.
I'm listening.
But you probably find it difficult to understand the excitement occasioned by archaeological findings, but I believe the science of archaeology reached its very peak in Egypt, in the Valley of the Kings, the tomb of King Tutankhamun. An enormous room lined with gold, a gold sarcophagus. Fabulous jewels, rich carvings, alabaster, jade. When they lifted the fantastic sheath of gold that covered the king, they found the most precious thing of all. A single flower on his breast, put there by his wife 4,000 years ago.
Why do you tell me this, Dr. Morehead?
Because I'm trying to tell you that I love you.
Oh.
And I would like you to be my wife.
But you don't know me.
Elena.
You know nothing about
me. What is there to know?
For 2 years I've tried to get to the United States. This is only Peru, and I have had to do many unhappy things just to get here.
None of that matters, Elena. Let me take you to the United States as my wife.
To California?
Anywhere you like.
To California, where they have all the apples.
Aren't you thinking of oranges?
Am I?
Yes. California is famous for oranges.
I see. Dr. Morehead, there is something I must know, something important.
Yes.
Who cut down the cherry tree?
Why, George Washington, of course. But why does it matter?
He lied to me. He lied to me even about that. You lie even about George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. You cannot tell the truth. I can never trust you.
You can't trust the doc, is that it?
He has to marry me. It is not funny.
Yeah, I guess it isn't. It's just all wrong. A girl like you, you're made for somebody like me, and you know it. We go together like fire and smoke.
No, never. I can do without you. You know why? In my country, when you want to know what kind of man a boy will be, you look at his father. Yes. And this friend of yours, this Morgan, he could be your father.
Morgan? That thieving lump of blubber?
Yes, Harry. I can see him in your eyes. The way you think, the way you talk. One day you will not be Harry anymore. You will be him.
I'm too tall to make a good Morgan.
For a tall man, you are the smallest man I ever met.
I went back to my tent, found Morgan holding the piece of Inca stone under the oil lamp and muttering to himself.
It doesn't make sense. The carving on this stone doesn't look like anything I've ever seen before.
Have you seen a mirror?
A mirror?
Yeah, that's what one of those circles is supposed to be.
You can read it like a book, huh?
Like a book.
It looks like I'm going to have to depend on you after all, doesn't it?
Weren't you planning to? Partners, aren't we?
Oh, sure, sure. Oh, man, we wish we could get into that tomb tonight. You know, for 14 years I've been dreaming about that sunburst all of gold and jewels. And now it's almost in my hands.
It'll be ours, Harry, ours. We'll split 50-50, a diamond for you and a diamond for me. How about it, Harry, huh?
Keep talking.
$1 million. It's worth that at least. You know what makes me shake just thinking about this? Yeah, look at my hands. I can't hold them still. You see, Harry?
I see, yeah.
What's the matter with you, Harry? Don't stare at me like that. Harry, what in blazes are you looking at? What do you see?
Me, Morgan. Only me.
Next morning, we all entered the tunnel together. Moorhead, Cardoza, Escutec, Elena, Morgan,
and me.
The beam of Moorhead's flashlight showed a hole about the size of a man's head broken into the wall of the tomb. First, it had to be made bigger.
How do they know this is Malcolm's tomb?
I researched, Miss Antonescu. At least we're reasonably sure.
You mean you're not positive it might turn out to be a dud?
No archaeological find is a dud, Mr. Borg.
There we are. Colonel Cardoza, Pachacutec, put on your dust masks.
Hey, what about us?
Only members of the expedition will be allowed to enter the tomb. The rest of you must wait here.
I crawled through the hole, then in a moment we saw Moret's flashlight sweeping the interior. Morgan started to shake again. Sweat rolled down his cheeks. Elena? She just stood there watching the two of us with an odd look. Then we heard Pachacutec yell.
Uncle Ico, we know who to direct.
Oh, what does he say? Well, what does he say? It's Manco's tomb. Oh, great, great.
He was not fooled. That's our Oriente.
Oh, talk in English, you fool.
It's about the sunburst.
Usnina. Rubimantum cara.
Well, have they found it? Harry, have they found it?
Yeah. It's made out of stone. Moorhead and Cardoza had never believed in a golden sunburst, so they weren't disappointed. They'd found Marco's tomb, his mummy, and enough pottery and knickknacks to keep him busy for weeks. But the Indians in the camp, they took the news hard. There was no music that night, only silence and a cold wind.
Very sad for them, is it not?
Oh, I didn't see
it. It is like when one has believed in something of somebody and they learn it is hopeless.
Only the Indians will believe again. Pachacutec's been telling them the sunburst will be found somewhere, sometime.
And you, Harry, will you go on looking?
Sunbursts would have been nice. I've found something to take its place.
But, Harry?
You?
No. You haven't found me.
Moorhead, after all. I'll give him my congratulations, just in case I don't see him again.
You're leaving?
Yeah, tonight. I went back to the tent. Morgan and I talked for a while, and we turned in. When I heard him snoring, I slipped out of bed and rummaged through his jacket. Found the stone all right, one of the pockets. 10 minutes later, I crawled through the opening into Manco's tomb. Just as I'd expected, Moorhead and Cardoza had left their equipment in the tomb. Flashlights, crowbars, carrying sacks. Mummy of Manco was in the center of the room. At the far end was a great stone throne. Above it, the stone sunburst. I played the flashlight on the sunburst. It was highly polished stone. Shot back the light at me like a mirror. The stone map showed the carving of a mirror. I turned to see where the rays reflected by the sunburst would focus in the opposite wall. Yes, they pinpointed just one particular slab of stone. I grabbed one of the crowbars. Slab started to move. And then picked up the flashlight and aimed it at the opening. Golden sunburst. Hundreds of jewels flashing red and green and blue and white and yellow.
Lift it up, Harry.
Morgan.
but I was sleeping. I just wanted to give you a chance to do my work for me.
I'm not working for you.
Don't give me an argument, buddy boy, because I got six good answers right here staring you in the face.
Yeah, you should have taken the gun, too. All right, now lift down that sunburst. All right. Now slip it into this gun, I said.
I guess you win, Morgan.
You ever had any doubts about this?
You're coming!
Give me that gunny sack.
Get back to me.
Thanks, Harry.
I must have been out for some time. When I finally came to, Morgan was gone and his sunburst with him. I crawled out of the tomb and ran to the mouth of the tunnel. The whole camp was awake. Indians with lighted torches were running toward the hills. Two shots from the direction of the trail over the mountain peak. Thanks for the clue, Morgan. Trail ran along a narrow shelf of rock hanging out over sheer space. Empty, black space. That was your last bullet, Morgan. Number six. Morgan? Morgan!
Harry. Harry. Hold me up, Harry. It's my knees. They just buckled under me. It's the altitude.
I want that sunburst, Morgan.
I'm an old man, Harry. There's nothing left. Nothing. You should have seen me in the old days, Harry. I was rugged then.
Give me the sunburst.
No. No, it's mine. It's mine.
Why did you bring the sunburst back to us?
Well, in the first place, I didn't take it. All I did was find it, and then get it away from Morgan.
Speaking for the government of Peru, Mr. Steele, I wish that there were some way in which we might show our appreciation.
You can. You can tell me where I'll find Miss Antonescu.
I believe she's in her tent.
Thanks. But there might be one other thing, Colonel.
Name it, sir.
Well, speaking for the government of Peru, maybe you might arrange an exit visa on my passport.
It shall be done.
Thank you.
On Monday, the 6th of December, 1971, The Avengers debuted on South African radio. Those listening in would have heard the distinctive tones of Donald Monat bringing a fresh interpretation to that most refined of agents, John Steed. Monat had carved out a career in acting, writing, and directing on three continents prior to The Avengers. He was already a household name in South Africa, a star of radio comedy and drama. Alongside Monat was Diane Appleby, a versatile actress well known for the children's favorite, Jet Jungle, here playing Steed's redoubtable sidekick, Emma Peel. Produced by David Gooden at his recording studio, Sonovision, on Plain Street, Johannesburg, South Africa, The Avengers was a Monday through Friday serial broadcast on Springbrook Radio in their 7:15 to 7:30 primetime slot. The original television programs were adapted into serial form, initially by Tony Jay, who would also direct the productions. After 6 months, Jay elected to return to his native Brit, and his role was assumed by Dennis Fulbig, who remained with the Avengers until its conclusion. The serials were recorded in what can only be described as a state of frenetic activity. Donald Monat cast his mind back. Serials like The Avengers were recorded at site with no rehearsal or read-through. 5 or 6 episodes in one afternoon. Normally, the first time you saw them was when you walked into the studio for the recording. All the live effects were done by the actors, and all the recorded effects and music were played in as we recorded, so there was very little editing or post-production to be done. It is a testament to the actors and production staff working under such pressure on The Avengers that many decades later, the serials entertain new audiences, not just in South Africa, but the world over. From the liner notes and design by Alan Hayes on the Avengers website. Our episode tonight is called The Fantasy Game. This serial was based on Honey for the Prince, 1966, written by Brian Clemens. And now, before we start, a word from Donald Monat.
Hello and greetings to all fans of the Avengers. I'm Donald Monat, and I had the pleasure of playing John Steed in the radio series produced in the early 1970s. It was a wonderful time for those of us who really enjoy the medium of radio drama, where your mind is free to conjure up all the exciting images of your own design and imagination. Each week, usually on a Thursday afternoon, the cast would get together at Sonovision Studios in Johannesburg to record a new Avengers story, which would normally be broadcast in 5 daily episodes from Monday to Friday. There would be perhaps 7 or 8 of us playing as many as 20 different characters, and we would also create the live sound effects such as footsteps, doors opening and closing, and even the body blows and the fight sequences. Most of us had never seen the scripts until we walked into the studio, but within 3 to 4 hours, 5 new action-packed episodes were on tape and, after some brief editing, ready to take the air. These recordings have certainly brought back some delightful memories to me. I hope you'll enjoy them too.
Now, from the makers of Cold Water Omo.
The room had a definite Middle Eastern atmosphere. A high ceiling, no doors, but many curved ornamental archways covered by brocade curtains. Dim lighting from behind Moorish screens, and of course, the heavy scent of incense. It could have been a setting from a very old Hollywood movie of the Arabian Nights. From behind some heavy drapes, 2 men moved into the room, moving lightly over the rich Persian carpets.
This is it, all right, Ronnie.
Yes, I think so, George. What an extraordinary setup.
Quite. But you know what we always say. Once a foreigner, always a foreigner.
Well, let's give the place a good going over. You search the desk.
Right. There's nothing much here.
God, it's very encouraging. Hey, look at this.
What is it?
Well, if I didn't know better, I'd say it was an Aladdin's lamp.
You better rub it. It might be able to solve us all this work.
Right. Here goes. Bring us luck, eh?
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Episode 1 of this story, in which John Steed and Emma Peel embark on the strange case of the Fantasy Game. The skies over London were dark and filled with rain clouds. A cold wind blew the fine drizzle into deserted thoroughfares and empty alleyways. It was not a night to be out, and few people were. Big Ben sonorously chimed midnight. Half a mile away, the sound floated unnoticed through the ornate Arabian apartment where the 2 agents, Ronnie Westcott and George Reed, recoiled in amazement from the vivid flash of light that lit up the whole room. They gasped as smoke filled one corner, and out of it stepped a shadowy figure in flowing robes. As the haze cleared, both men saw the snout of a Sten gun leveled towards them.
No! No!
George Reed was mowed down by a hail of bullets. Ronnie Westcott, who was closer to the arched entrance, sprinted through the velvet drapes as the Sten gun swung round on him. The figure ran forward in pursuit, firing all the time. When it reached the passageway, There was no sign of Ronnie. The man paused, crouched to the ground, wiped his hand on the carpet and brought it up sticky with blood. Clearly, Ronnie was hit. The man smiled cruelly and turned back into the room, standing over the body of George Reed with great satisfaction. The rain continued to fall over London for the next 2 or 3 hours. Then the wind changed. The clouds disappeared, and by dawn it was dry and pleasant and far warmer. Across Hampstead Heath that morning came the sound of a woman's laughter. They'd been to a party which had lasted far longer than they'd anticipated.
Oh, top of the morning to you, Mrs. Peters.
And a very good morning to you, Steed. If the morning's as fun as the night was, we should have a good day ahead.
Right. Nothing like an early morning walk to start things off.
Or finish things up.
Coffee at my place, I think.
Splendid suggestion.
Good. Step out then, Mrs. Peel. Step out.
A short while later, at the entrance to Steed's apartment...
Coffee? Hello? Oh! Umbrella stand right across the hall. Well, up with it. Right.
I'll attend to the bacon and eggs. Oh, 2 eggs for me, sunny side up. And I think I'd...
What the devil's happened here?
Steed looked around him. 2 pictures on the walls were hanging awry. A third was knocked to the floor. A small table lay on its side, surrounded by broken glasses.
You weren't expecting visitors, were you, Steed?
Steed didn't reply, but moved to the kitchen to check the state of affairs there and in the other rooms. Mrs. Peel, looking around, found a mark on the wall almost hidden by the settee. The mark was blood, a stark red handprint. She knelt to examine it, and a second print lower down. As she stretched out her hand...
Please!
Oh, no!
A blood-stained hand reached to Mrs. Peel's. Ronnie Westcott was lying behind the settee, his eyes staring upwards in a glazed manner. The other hand was clutched to his chest, wet with blood.
Mrs. Peel? Mrs. Peel, what is it? Oh, Ronnie Westcott.
I'll phone for a doctor.
No. No, mustn't. Mustn't leap out. Top security. I'm finished. Finished anyway. No doctor.
How is it, Mrs. Peel?
Steed. Listen carefully. George Reed, myself, we stumbled onto something big, important, full story in George's rooms. Evidence.
Where is George?
George is dead.
Who did this, Ronnie? Who was it?
Jeannie.
Jeannie, who? Who is she?
Honey. Beware. Steed up. I'm up.
Ronnie Westcott. One of the best undercover men in the business. Was.
Steed? Steed, what did he say?
Something about a woman named Jeannie. A good-looking woman. He said she was a honey. Well, call MI5, Mrs. Peel. Q Division Colonel Robertson. Tell him what's happened. He'll arrange to have Ronnie collected quietly without any fuss.
Where will you be?
They said there was a full report of all this in George's room. I'm going to collect it.
George Reed's dead body still lay where it had fallen hours before. The tapestries at the far end of the Arabian room were parted. A powerful-looking Turkish man entered, expensively, immaculately dressed. The robed assassin led him across to where the dead man lay.
Hey, Mr. Arcady, this is the man, and this is his wallet.
George Reed. You say the other one got away, Vincent?
Yes, but he was hit. I didn't miss him. He can't live long.
I trust not. It is a pity you allowed him to escape. The thing to do now is cover all traces. I will attend to this one. Ah, an address. The address on this card from the wallet. You see what you can find.
Yes, very well, Mr.
And, Vincent,
Whatever you find, destroy it.
George Reed, the late George Reed, lived in rooms in North London. John Steed knew where they were and drove over. But he was just a little late. The man Vincent got there ahead of him. He had shed his conspicuous robes, and he was dressed all in black. A sinister, slight figure who moved with assurance the front door of the apartments. Working skillfully at the lock, he was soon inside.
George Reed. So this is where he lived.
There were two rooms, a bed-sitting room and a smaller one that Reed must have used as a study. Vincent chose the latter. Moved first to the desk, pulling out the drawers, rummaging through their contents. Breaking into the locked drawer ruthlessly, he found a metal waste paper basket and began filling it with papers from the locked drawer. Then he moved to the filing cabinet. It was, of course, locked, but that didn't present any problems.
Easy. It must be in here. Yes, the file. The file marked QQF. Yes, all this must go.
Vincent tipped the contents into the waste paper basket and lit a match. He watched the flames devour the papers with satisfaction. When the last one had curled into a charred brown wafer, he took a ruler from the desk and stirred the ashes. Satisfied that no one could restore the contents, he moved towards the door. It was then that John Steed entered. Vincent quickly moved into the protection of a large cupboard that stood near the door. Steed entered cautiously and was immediately aware of the smell of burning. He looked around, spotted the waste paper basket, and moved over to it. Vincent, in the shadows, drew from his belt a long oriental dagger. Steed touched the waste paper basket and recoiled from the heat just as Vincent lunged forward. The knife came down, but Steed had moved sideways. The knife ripped his coat. Steed grabbed at the knife hand just in time. The two men grappled. Steed found himself staring at the stockinged mask. With a vicious twist, Vincent stabbed again, but Steed was prepared this time. The knife fell to the floor. Vincent got a better grip and tripped Steed, who fell back against the cabinet. Vincent moved in, but Steed bounced back from the cabinet, knocked Vincent sideways. Steed got a hold and with one swift movement threw Vincent over his head towards the window. The effort made Steed fall to his knees, but by the time he'd scrambled to his feet and made for the window, Vincent had picked himself up and was running down the alleyway. Steed paused, realized pursuit was impossible, and picked up the knife from the carpet.
Well, this should be useful. Definitely not made in Sheffield.
Steed placed the knife on the desk and inspected the filing cabinet and the waste paper basket. It was clear that Vincent had done a good job on getting rid of everything Steed was looking for. Finally, Steed moved over to the tall cupboard by the door.
Cupboard filled with dozens of jars. All marked best British honey. Well, this can't be for real.
In Steed's apartment, Mrs. Peel waited patiently. Eventually, the doorbell rang.
Ah, Steed's forgotten his key. Not again.
It was the postman.
Morning, miss. Register package. Just sign here, will you?
Oh, right. Thank you.
Thank you, miss.
Mrs. Peel moved back into the room. Ronnie Westcott's body had been removed, but she still glanced with apprehension towards the spot behind the settee. She sat down on the settee and studied the parcel, turning it over in her hands. On the back was a label. Mrs. Peel read,
B. Bumble and Company, a gift from George Reed. Best British honey. Now, what the devil does that mean?
What indeed?
The Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers, brought to you by the makers of Cold Water Omo.
tonight's second serial, Temple of Vampires, from the anthology series I Love a Mystery, which is considered by many radio fans and collectors as the greatest radio adventure serial of all time. It first appeared on NBC's Pacific Coast outlets back in January of 1939, went coast to coast later that fall, and appeared on and off over nearly every broadcast network until the final reprisal show at the end of 1953. Fast-paced and deftly scripted, Fleischman's dry yeast, vitamized, over-the-top excitement is still beloved by fans of radio mystery drama nearly 60 years after it first appeared on the airwaves. Another note, I Love a Mystery even inspired the writers of the original Hanna-Barbera cartoon Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? The I Love a Mystery show was written, produced, and directed by Carlton E. Morse. And for tonight's adventure, Episode 1 of Temple of Vampires. In any event, this is one of my favorite shows and the genesis for one of Broken Sea's favorite productions and mine, Jake Sampson, Monster Hunter.
The National Broadcasting System presents I Love a Mystery. Morse adventure thriller, Temple of Vampires.
See now, Reggie, how long ago did we leave Matagalpa?
Was that the last big jungle town we passed over?
Yeah, Matagalpa.
55 minutes ago, Jack.
Then we should ought to be getting pretty close to Boaco.
Boaco, Doc.
What's this?
Boaco, not Boaco.
You don't say. Well, anyway, ain't we almost there, Jack?
Yes, keep your eyes open, Reg. We ought to be sighting Boaco any moment now.
I know. Nothing on the horizon as yet.
Is that a stopping point?
Yes, I wired ahead from Guatemala City for them to be ready to refuel us.
Well, if I remember my Central America, it ain't gonna be much of an airport.
No, they told me in Guatemala City they'd have to refuel by hand. Oh, you want to do any checking on the motors while we're down there, Reggie?
That's just what I had in mind. We're throwing a little oil somewhere.
We are?
Oh, I say nothing serious, but I think I'd better have a look.
Yes, don't take anything for granted. After we leave Boaco, there's nothing between us and 500 miles of jungle but the town of Huigalpa. And there's no airport there.
Wow, jungle. 500 miles of them.
You sound as though you're looking forward to enjoying the prospect, sonny.
Of course. Anything to make me forget that awful Richard curse and all those murders.
Well, a little jungle goes a long way for my money.
What happens after we leave Boaco, Jack?
Well, we fly between the Huapi Mountains and Lake Nicaragua.
Lake Nicaragua? Is it much of a lake?
Only 50 miles long.
50 miles? Well, that's an infant ocean.
A lot of Indians all along the lake, I understand. From the lower end of the lake to San Jose, Costa Rica is another 150 miles.
And that's our destination for tonight? San Jose, Costa Rica?
That's right, Sugar, and we'll be getting in there around 8 or 9 o'clock.
Yeah, if we're lucky. Should be still light enough to land without flares.
Gee, San Jose, Costa Rica. Doesn't that sound like fun? And then what do we do?
Well, sonny, then's about the time and place that I start looking for trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Well, I don't know about the rest of you, but I know what kind I'm looking for.
Yes. You'll no doubt find it, too.
Doc, you don't mean something tall, dark, and lovely.
Honey, the girls down in this part of the world have the biggest black eyes and the longest eyelashes of any girls in the whole wide world.
Oh, my, my. How can you bear to wait?
I can't, hardly.
And you, Jack, what sort of trouble are you going to look for?
I am reserving the right to pick and choose my brand of trouble when we get there.
And man, oh, man, is there plenty to pick and choose from. Anything you want, from an ordinary gambling house brawl with cutting knives to black magic and native voodoo rites.
Really?
Well, you never saw the like of it. Well, sonny, the last time we was down this way, Reggie almost got himself skinned alive trying to save a half-breed girl from an Indian sacrifice.
Did you save her, Reggie?
No. But, Doc, that wasn't near San Jose. That was in the back country further east.
Oh, sure, of course it was. But it's all the same in this part of the world. Stuff not only happens, it comes right up and smacks you in the face.
You boys must know a side of Central and South America I never knew.
You've been here before?
Yes. Of course, I always stuck pretty close to the civilized areas.
Doc's laying it on pretty thick. The average traveler's as safe in Central America as he is in his own doorstep. You gotta go looking for trouble here, the same as many other part of the world.
Uh-huh. What about you, Reggie?
Me?
Yeah. What sort of trouble are you going to look for tonight?
Oh, look here, I think I'll take it as it comes. I think I'm going to feel cheated, however, if I don't find somebody who wants to do a bit of brawling, sailor fashion.
A brawl? Why, Reggie, and you look so gentlemanly. What would make you want to fight?
Money, politics, women. Oh, look here, does one need a reason?
Oh, my goodness. What sort of men have I got mixed up with?
Did you ever daydream, Sonny?
Oh, so this is daydreaming.
What kind of trouble are you be wanting?
Oh, I hadn't thought. Let's see. Are the men as handsome as the girls are beautiful?
And you'd better forget that.
Why, Jack, why?
Well, we're going to have other things to do besides look after you.
Yeah, honey, we're only going to have one night in Costa Rica. We don't want to spend all our time down here saving you from a fate worse than death.
Oh.
Well, you heard me.
Now, you boys, look here. You pay attention to your own brand of trouble. Let me take care of mine.
Quite, I'll buy that.
And see that you remember it.
All right. Jack, Guaco coming up.
Good. Did you spot the airport?
Not yet. Do you mind taking a squint through the glasses?
Well, here they are.
Oh, thanks.
Looks like quite a place.
Yeah. How queer the way it seems to be laid right down in the middle of the wilderness.
Now, I got it, Reggie. Field's right straight ahead.
On this side of the town?
Yes, better start dropping down.
Down we go. Watch it, Sonny.
Uh-huh. How long will we be here?
Not more than 20 minutes, I hope.
Swell. Just long enough to stretch my leg.
And my stomach's telling me it's time to eat.
Me too. I hope they have better coffee than we got in Guatemala City.
I'd better circle the strip to get the feel of the port. Seems to be a bit small for a ship this size.
Good idea. Yeah, I see they're expecting us. They've got a stack of 5-gallon cans of gasoline out on the field.
You mean they pour the gasoline in 5 gallons at a time?
That's how they do it down here.
All right, hang on. Here we go down. Hold everything.
Nice going, Reggie. How does she handle?
Beautiful. Take her right up alongside the cans of gas.
Righto.
So far, so good.
Yep. Open her up, Doc. Everybody out.
And a pleasure it is.
You folks go ahead. I'll supervise the refueling.
Hey, that's no fun.
Go ahead, Doc. You and Sonny hunt up something to eat. I'll help Reggie check the oil pumps.
Okay. Come on down, Sonny.
Ooh. Well, I'm stiffer than I thought I was.
Jump. I'll catch you.
All right. Here I come.
Ah, got you. And I never held a prettier arm full of fluff and feathers.
Oh, put me down, you egg.
Now, why'd you have to say that?
Doc, you're shocking the natives.
Boy, do them good, if you ask me.
Oh, Doc, you fool.
Well, you insist. There you are, on your feet. And not a bad arm full of girl, if anyone should ask.
Did you just notice?
Yes, sir. I'm beginning to wonder where you've been all my life.
Don't tell me I roused the sentimental Texas boy in you.
Well, something went and made my heart go flip-flap.
Flip-flop, Doc, not flip-flap.
Jack, you wasn't supposed to be listening.
Yeah.
Never mind. It wasn't important.
What you mean it wasn't important? Of course it was important.
And I thought you two were looking for a place to get some food.
Well, where are you going, fella?
Well, I got to take care of the clearance papers and pay for this gasoline. I'll join you later.
Well, how about it, Sonny?
Oh, yeah. I'm crazy to look around.
Okay, come on.
We won't see any of the town, I guess.
No, it's over that way. Look at yonder at the Indians in blankets are squatting on the edge of the field.
They act as though they didn't believe their eyes.
I don't reckon airplanes are one of the things they see the most down here.
Goodness. Positively hot.
Lady, you're in the tropics now.
I know. Like a new world. Down here on the ground, Bulaco looks more than ever like it was carved out of the wilderness. And what a wilderness. Look at the jungle all about us.
Yeah, stuff sure grows down here.
It looks so rank and deadly. Every plant trying to strangle the life out of every other plant.
Murder in plant life, huh?
Yeah, that's just what it looks like. Vicious, unwholesome murder.
Hey, here. This looks like it'd be an eating joint. Shall we try it?
Oh, God. It's dirty.
Of course it's dirty. We don't have to eat the dirt, do we?
Well, we don't get something besides food in here, obviously. Right.
Well, let's have a look anyway.
Door open. The screen. Flies everywhere.
Hi, friend.
would you maybe have some coffee?
Hey, sure, I got coffee.
Then we'll have two coffees. What else you have on the menu?
The beans.
Want any beans, son?
No, for heaven's sake, no. This kind of weather?
But what else you have besides beans?
You don't like beans.
No, neighbor, we don't like beans. What else you got?
Maybe you like some frijoles.
Frijoles? What you mean, frijoles? That's just south of the border for beans.
Sure it is.
Is that all you got in this black ranch?
Frijoles, beans, what more is there?
I guess we're going to take beans and like it.
Hey, you got any bread?
Tortillas.
Yeah? Well, looky, is this the only eating place around you?
What's the matter, you say that? What's the matter with this place?
Well, fella, it is kind of dirty now, ain't it? You got to admit that.
You say this place is dirty?
That's right. I say this place is dirty.
Sure it's dirty. Who cares?
You win, mister. Give us tortillas, frijoles, and coffee.
Now you talk sense. You gringos make me sick to my stomach. All gringos make me sick to my stomach.
Well, we're all ready to take off now, Jack. All right, pile in. Doc, close her up. Let's get going. Hey, Sonny, what did them beans do to you? They give me indigestion, plus heartburn, plus the hiccups, plus one.
Well, I hardly touched them, but it was good coffee.
All set, Doc. Let her go. Okay. Watch it. Hold your hat, kid. Here we go. South, she is.
Should hit Lake Nicaragua in about half an hour. Then follow along the shoreline.
Good. You both can relax and sleep off your beans.
You know, I like that stop best of all. I really got the feel of the jungle tropics. Lazy and dreamy. Just a little bit rotten and dangerous.
Yeah, that's life in the tropics that she has lived. Our first real
hello,
taste.
Everybody.
What's that?
I just said hello.
Jack. I say, a dolly infant.
Why, Jack, it's a little boy.
Oh, where did you come from?
Back in there.
Back in the luggage compartment? Oh, look here. We've got a blooming stowaway.
Where did you get on this plane?
Back in San Diego.
You've been on this plane since we left San Diego?
Sure.
But little boy, where are your mother and father?
I haven't got any mother. My father's back in San Diego.
This is great.
But don't you know you shouldn't have done this? Your father must be terribly worried.
Oh, no, he isn't. He put me in here.
Your father put you in this plane?
Uh-huh. He gave me a package of sandwiches and told me to stay here until I got hungry.
You mean your father abandoned you?
I don't know. He just said to stay in there till I got hungry.
Well, what are you going to do now?
Oh, what is there to do? Then if we land in San Jose, we'll take him to the American consul.
Will he see that he gets back to the United States?
Well, he'll have to. Hey, what's your name?
Hermie.
Hermie what?
That's all, just Hermie.
But Hermie... What's your father's name?
His name's Hermie, too, and I'm hungry and thirsty.
Well, of course you are, darling.
All right, Reggie, break out some cheese and crackers.
And some of that chocolate.
Oh, Joe, wet nurse to an unwashed juvenile.
Oh, shame on you. How old are you, darling?
I'm 7. Please don't call me darling.
Well, of course I won't.
I'm a man, and women are no good.
Oh?
And put that in your pipe and smoke it, Sonny Richard.
Yeah, that puts me in my place, all right.
Boy, I sure do like airplanes.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. When Pop said I was going for an airplane ride, I just about busted my britches.
Well, here you are, Hermie. Sink your teeth into this.
Thanks. I guess you fellas are a bunch of right guys.
Some adventure, huh, Jack?
Yeah, great.
Yes, sir. Now, if we only had a big box of sand, we could start a kindergarten.
I Love a Mystery, written and directed by Carlton E. Morse, featuring Russell Thorson as Jack, Jim Bowles as Doc Long, and Tony Randall as Reggie York, with Mercedes McCambridge as Sonny, Louis Van Ruten as Manuel, and Sarah Fussell as Hermie.
Have a good evening. Come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com Diddy. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.